I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org, New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today we will be talking with Henry Goldrich. He co-wrote Wall of Fame, New York City's legendary Manny's Music. And now, here to talk with us is Henry. Thank you so much for being with us here on Citywide, Henry.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us about your book, The Wall of Fame.
Well, the store where the pictures are on started in 1935 by my father, who was not a musician to speak of, but he was a great salesman. And we had a small store at 120 West 48th Street, which we moved to a larger store after we were bought up by the Rockefeller Foundation in 1968. Now, the pictures started on the wall because my mother, may she rest in peace, thought that it would be a good idea to put pictures on the wall instead of having to paint. And we continued this picture set up as we moved to the new store. And I believe at last count, before we sold the store, we had approximately 2,500 to 3,000 pictures, most of them autographed, starting from Louis Armstrong to all the great jazz players up until now with all the great rock stars. Is there anyone special you want to talk about?
Sure. Well, we can talk about Bob Dylan if you want to talk about him.
Well, Dylan was a very interesting person. He came in, never talked too much, never bought too much, just used to come in and browse, look around, and walk out. And I had to beg him to put a picture up, which he put one up. He wasn't very friendly with anybody. In fact, one day he was walking by the store and looking in the window, and I went out and I asked him why he didn't come in. He just walked away. Well, that's about all of Dylan. I guess my oldest friend in the business, who's a big star today, is probably Paul Simon.
Yes.
Paul's father was a musician. His name was Lou Simon, a great bass player, club date musician. Used to go from, you know, job to job at night and play with different groups. And he brought Paul into the store, according to Paul's record, remembrance, when he was around 7 years old. And he kept coming in, and then he went into that movie Sounds of Silence, and they had a hit record, and he came into the store with Artie, and I said, listen, you guys, you're never going to make it with a name like Simon and Garfunkel. Keep the Tom and Jerry. And he said, no, Simon and Garfunkel, what it was. And I said, well, you're never going to be a big hit. And I proved wrong by that. And in fact, the last picture he gave me, I think, said, still together after all these years, and that's still on the wall. Jimi Hendrix was a customer before he became famous. He worked for a guy named Curtis Wright, who was a rock and roll blues player. And they came into the store one day, and Jimmy needed a new guitar, and it was something like $260, $270, and he didn't have the money. He had $100 and some odd. And since my father started off by trusting musicians, I did too in a lot of cases, and I trusted him for the $160, and he said he'd be back in a few weeks, but a year went by. He went to England, became famous. He came into the store. I didn't know who he was. He says, I owe you money. I said, yeah, for what? And he said, I owe you money for that guitar I bought with Curtis Wright. I said, thank you very much, and after that, it became history. I mean, Jimmy became probably one of my best customers. He always bought something new. He always bought something that he liked the looks of. And he had an open charge account with me. And the only one he didn't pay was when he died. He had bought a drum set for Mitch Mitchell. And I never got paid for that because Jimmy never was around to pay for it. But he was very honorable with his bills, with his accountants and everything. And I never had problems with him, but he was very shy, and he decided that he couldn't come into the store when all the people were around, even though most of the customers that we had didn't bother the celebrities, he was just, you know, he didn't like being stared at. So he asked us to keep the store open after hours, and we did. And he had a good time just doing anything he wanted by himself, nobody annoying him, trying everything out. And one day when he was leaving, his signing the check, my mother, who was still alive, was taking the cash. This was quite a family-oriented business. And she was taking the cash, and he offered her a tip. And my mother took it. She said, "You know who I am, Tony?" He says, "Yeah, I know who you are. Take the tip." And she did. And when he died, he left me a couple of his guitars for some reason, traded in or repair, I don't know. And I think I sold both of them for under $300. And the same thing happened with Buddy Holly. Buddy and I became good friends when he came in from Lubbock with Buddy Knox and the Rhythm Organ, I think the group was. Now, they came into the store, and they were nothing at the time, and Buddy just was a very nice kid, and he invited us to his wedding. As a matter of fact, I don't remember, we were in Europe at the time, I think, but he sent my wife and I a check for $15 for our wedding, wedding gifts, pre-wedding, because we got married right before we died, but we were engaged before that. We should have saved that check, along with other things I should have saved, like his guitars, which I sold for nothing. And the Beatles had the same thing. When they came to New York, all of their equipment was sent in from the different companies by, let's say, Ludwig and Hofner and Rickenbacker and Gibson. And I should have saved the cartons, because they said Ringo Starr care of Manny's, or John Lennon care of Manny's. With those things and the guitars, they traded back into me, and whatever they did, I never saved. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? But the Beatles, all four of them, were really quite courteous young men. They used to come into the store. In fact, the first time we came in, I think it was Ringo and George Harrison. And they were dressed a little outrageously, and they came in, and we were very crowded. And no one bugged them, and they just said, "You wait until we'll wait until you can take care of us." They just looked around, signed some autographs. Nobody bugged them. They didn't bug anybody. They got stared at, and they stared back, and they had a great time. And they autographed a couple of pictures for me, which was nice for the wall. One of the pictures got broken, and the glass stuck to it, and the autographs are not too good, but they're still legible. And we can go on for hours. I think every top rock star was in my store that ever lived, except for Presley. He never came in. He called us once. He needed some stuff at his hotel, and we delivered it to him. And he was very pleased about that. Who else do you want to hear about? Well, I can go on for...
I know. It's great. I love hearing these stories. I know a lot of people do, too.
Well,
I know you said you had many pictures. How did you choose which ones to put in your book?
My son, Ian, who works at Manny's, my daughter, Holly Schoenfeld, who really put the book together, picked out the pictures. And the funny part of it is, my other son manages Guitar Center in New York, and Ian manages Manny's. So they are in competition. But they all got together with the people from Hal Leonard, which they figured were the better ones. They left out a few that I thought they should put in, but they did a pretty good job. Every one of those pictures of the truth, and all those stories are true.
I know you have a lot of stories about how you had to close the store down sometimes when the musicians came in.
That happened when Hendrix came in once in a while, but that very seldom happened.
Oh.
We just blocked the entrance, and we had an upstairs, so by the time they got upstairs, the people were, you know, they weren't allowed with them. The greatest ones were Herman's Hermits. they always had a group of girls following them. And they used to come in the store. The girls were hanging out in front of the store. And they used to run up the stairs to the second floor. And always got what they wanted, but nobody got up the steps with them. They were one of the nicest groups that ever came into the store. The whole, except for what it was, Herman, well, Peter Noonan, he was never a musician, really. He was a great actor. So he never really hung out in the store. But I can't think of anyone in the rock genre from up until 1995. Because the whole thing changed then. The musicians, when I was younger in the 60s and the 70s, were musicians and they loved the business. Today, the guys just love business. They're not in love with music. We used to, my father started us off, we used to have a golf tournament. And at my father's tournament, there was people played like Sammy Davis Jr. came in on helicopters because he was doing a show. And Errol Garner played piano and drank God knows how many martinis. Al Caiola, Don Arnone. I mean, the most famous musicians in New York, the club, the studio musicians, they couldn't get a record date going on the day we had the tournament. Because most of the musicians, there were about 100 of them, were at the golf course. And it was a very mixed group. My father had a lot of black friends, as I do. And they were all invited to the tournament with their families. We'd had breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then cocktails afterwards. And they used to jam until around 3 o'clock in the morning, and no one ever taped them. I mean, Joe Williams was there. He sang Clark Terry, J.J. It was just all of the famous studio musicians, not the famous, the friends studio musicians came to them. When my father passed on in the later years and I started to play golf again, we had a tournament at Alpine Country Club where I belonged. And it was a memoriam of a guy named Jimmy Malin, who was probably one of the greatest studio percussionists. And I ran this for years, and we had Paul Schaefer doing the MC work because he was friendly with Jimmy. Even though he didn't play golf, he came for the dinners and the party afterwards. And we had a lot of famous guys there, too, and everybody played golf, and it was an intermixing of the musicians, but that was in the later days, not like the big band days where everybody loves to play and jam. These guys played a little bit. Paul Schaefer played piano. They sang along. But it never lasted to 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Those were the musicians today are all work out of electricity. They don't play anymore. You don't see a guy like Bucky Pizzarelli coming in the store and taking a Ramirez acoustic guitar down. I'm playing for 45 minutes just to tune himself up. They don't do that. The kids today, they know what they want. They're good musicians, and they do what they want. Sometimes too much, I think.
How has this changed the way you have to sell instruments?
Well, today, I mean, when you see instruments in sale at Costco and Walmart and all these things, I mean, those are off the shelves. These people, the musicians that want to be musicians still go into a music store and try out the stuff and know what they're talking about and know what they're doing and take advice. The people that buy from these, from the computer and from the supermarkets, they don't really know their music. They don't know their instruments. And they have to get into a music store really to be able to do the correct thing with their instrument. I mean, you don't see a kid coming in, going into Costco, taking a Fender guitar down and playing something really good on it. You see them banging on it. That's all they do today. They're not musicians as they used to be.
It definitely seems like music's turned into something more of a marketing industry than...
That's what it is.
Yeah. You're listening to Citywide on WNYU 89.1 FM New York. I'm Darren Levy, and I'm talking with Henry Goldrich, who co-wrote The Wall of Fame, New York City's legendary Manny's Music. So what do you think drew so many musicians to Manny's?
Well, we got started, and my father was the first white salesman to go up to Harlem to take care of the musicians. And all of them, Benny Goodman even had a little studio in my father's store. They all came to my house. There must have been about 15 stores in the area. But we were the only one really that discounted. And we charged the musicians so they didn't have money, which most musicians didn't. They would charge things and walk out with the equipment, and they never forgot. So all these guys kept coming in and out, and they lived with us, actually. I mean, when the union had a union day, which was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Wednesdays and Fridays, they used to come up to the store, we bought a piano for them, and they used to jam. I mean, you had Dizzy Gillespie playing piano, Charlie Parker playing tenor sax, all the finest rock, bop musicians, because they didn't really have any place to get together, they came together at Manny's. So that bought us a lot of people, and then we had to put it out because drugs started getting sold, we didn't know about it, so we closed it down. But they had great musicians in those days playing just what they wanted to play. And bop at the time was not the most popular music around.
What did you enjoy most about spending time at Manny's Music?
I enjoyed the musicians. I became very, very close friends with Bucky Pizzarelli, Al Caiola, Tony Mottola, a guy named George Barnes is gone. Don Unknown, who was probably the best guitarist in the country and the least known. And we used to go out and socialize. And they used to come in the store, and we got a picture on Sonny Rollins saying, "To Manny's, where I bought my first one, and we'll buy a lot more." Now, Sonny is still a friend. We spent a lot of time just talking. They used to love just to sit around and discuss music, discuss their friends, discuss the music business, discuss who's doing what, who's better. Like one day, George Benson was a real pain in the butt. He used to hang out in the store all the time, and he used to drive me crazy. He used to go and take the guitars off the wall without my permission. So one day I was kicking him out, and Wes Montgomery walked in and said, "Hey, Henry, stop. This kid's good. This kid's really a good player." So I let him play, and he has his picture on the wall. Says, "You might keep kicking me out, but I'll keep coming back." Love George Benson. And then he lived around the corner from where I lived in New Jersey. And we used to go to dinner with him and his wife and his kids. So, it was a friendlier business. Today, the people that own the businesses, the big companies, are not musicians. They're in Johnson & Johnson and toilet paper and everything. They're not musically oriented people. Years ago, when I dealt with a company, we made gigantic deals, and it was all done by a shake of the hand. No one had a written contract. We never had a discussion about it. It was done by word. In fact, in the book, you get two of the guys, I just remember, was Bill Schultz, who ran Yamaha, then Gibson, and then Fender, and Jim Marshall, Marshall Amplifiers. These guys became friends, and everything was done just by shaking hands, which they don't do anymore. The business is a completely different thing. It's a business, not a companionship business.
Well, you have worked with a lot of stars. Do you have any insight you can provide to how you can... I know the music industry... we've been talking about how the music industry has changed, but do you think you can provide any insight into how to become big in the music industry?
Well, first thing, know somebody. Believe me, that helps. Know somebody in the business, and you gotta have talent. You can't make it just by playing loudly. You gotta be able to read music. You should write a little music. You gotta practice a lot. And as I said, have somebody that you know that will help you out. Because It's very hard to do it on your own today. Very hard. It's a tough business. Even though I haven't been in it for around 6-7 years, I remember just when I was getting out of it, it was not a fun business anymore. When I was there, it was great fun.
Well, do you think those days will ever come back again?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the kids today... Well, you know, I can't say. I listened to some of the... On the radio, I listened to some of these young kids who are 8, 9, and 10 playing, and they're amazing. See, you never can say never. It could always maybe happen, maybe not. I hope it happens again for the music business. I hope it stays off the computers so much. I hope it becomes a music business again, not an electronic business. And that's what it is today. Everything, that's what hurt me. We had a store around the corner, and it was we had all of the big boards and all the high-tech equipment when the companies came out with synthesizers and small stuff. And it was small. And we got stuck with these boards that were $17,000, $18,000 that were 15 foot long. And they came out with these things that were $2,000 that was a foot long that did the same thing. So everything today is electronic. It's a shame. You hear very few acoustical guitarists around the world that are popular and famous.
Seems like everybody, even if they do play acoustic, they still still play their electric guitar more often.
Oh, yeah.
How did New York City help support Manny's?
Well, we had one street, 48th Street, that at one time had, I would say, 15 stores, and they had on the corner of the street, they had a place called the Fraternal Clubhouse, where I think it was one of the only studios in New York. So they attracted the musicians to there, and all the stores, you know, when people saw one street, all the stores, they came there, and then there was one building, 117 West 48th Street, across the street from me, I was at 120, had all of the teachers, the finest music teachers and the finest repair shops in New York. So that brought them all to 48th Street. And at one time, they were going to call it Music Street, but that never went through. But we had I'll tell you a funny story. As I said, down the street was this place called the Fraternal Clubhouse, where they used to practice for TV or do the status studio. One day, Sammy Davis, who was a very, very good customer since he was a little boy, came into the store dressed as one of the Three Musketeers with Ray Bolger, dueling from the Fraternal Clubhouse to my store, which went about 150 yards, onto the counters, off the counters, up the stairs, down to the stairs, attracting a crowd, and then running back into the Fraternal Clubhouse. I mean, that would only happen in New York, and only on 48th Street, where the musicians, they loved each other. They all had a feeling toward music and toward each other, even if they weren't musicians. So that's one of the things that brought 48th Street into prominence.
Yeah, it's a very legendary street there.
Oh, yeah. It really was in the old days. You couldn't imagine who was up and down the street. It's from, I'll tell you, I think I got it in the book about Itzhak Perlman. He was quite a musician. He did things that I couldn't imagine anybody doing on a violin. Especially we had an electric violin that just came out, and he wouldn't touch it because he didn't believe it. Then he finally heard somebody playing it, and he took it up, and he did things that were unreal. I mean, the guy was a fantastic musician, one of the only ones that I really admired in the music business. He has overcome every obstacle in the world and still is the greatest and one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet.
I know you mentioned you saw a lot of people before they were stars and after they were stars.
Oh, yeah. When let's say, Paul Stanley, he used to call me Uncle Henry because he used to come into the store with his parents when he was a kid. He used to hang out, had nothing to do, and he was a musician, and he liked to play the guitars and he bought a few, so I let him hang out in the store. And he, when he had the first record with Kiss, he came into the store and he was so happy. He had just got enough money to buy his parents a home out on the Long Island Shore. And he was just, I mean, that to him was the nicest thing in the world, getting his parents a big home. And who was Lou Reed? I knew him, his father owned a hardware store out on Long Island, and he used to come in. And he was a brilliant man. All the problems that he went through, he was very brilliant. I mean, a pleasure to talk to, even when he was stoned, and he was stoned for a while. And then, of course, there were the Rascals and, the Lovin' Spoonful, John Sebastian. When I started doing this book, came down from Stockwood, where they had the concert, and he came to my apartment, my house, in Fort Lee, but it's taken 2 hours, just to talk about the book and everything, and about how he came to Manny's. His father was a very fine harmonica player, professional, and he used to bring him into the store when he bought his harmonicas, and he bought him his guitars, and the book tells you all about, in his own words, he his own little article in there, how he became so friendly at Manny's.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to finish up, but before we do, what do you want someone to take away with them after they look through your book, The Wall of Fame?
Just to know that musicians are marvelous people. They're not what the papers say they are. Most of them are exceedingly intelligent. They're well-versed in their instruments. And, they're just basically very good people and very marvelous talents.
Well, it's definitely a very wonderful book here. I really enjoy just looking through it and seeing all the pictures and seeing all everybody's comments.
I appreciate that very much.
And you're definitely a true music legend here. I really appreciate having you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Wall of Fame, New York City's legendary Manny's Music, is in bookstores everywhere. That's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments about today's show to citywide@wnyu.org. Visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. We'll be back next week with more Arts Talk, but for now keep it here on New York University Radio, because up next is experimental acoustic music with Heather on Outside. Thanks so much for tuning in, and from everyone here at WNYU News, have a great night.